Aguilar, and this is your call. That is the sound of the U.S. Navy's underwater sonar program, which has been deployed in more than 70% of the world's oceans. The U.S. Navy and the California Coastal Commission are meeting tomorrow to discuss the plan to detonate more than 50,000 underwater explosives off of the Southern California coast. The Navy also wants to run more than 10,000 hours of high-intensity sonar. According to the National Resources Defense Fund, which has sued the Navy over this program, active sonar systems produce intense sound waves that sweep the ocean like a floodlight, revealing objects in their path. Some systems operate at more than 235 decibels, producing sound waves that can travel across tens or even hundreds of miles of ocean. During testing off the California coast, noise from the Navy's main low-frequency sonar system was detected across the breadth of the northern Pacific Ocean. Now, marine mammals like whales and dolphins depend on hearing to survive. The NRDC says the Navy's sonar emits sounds akin to the volume of a rocket blast. The Navy says it uses the sonar to track submarines, torpedoes, mines, and other potential threats underwater. And the Navy's own research shows that increased sonar training will significantly harm marine mammals more than 10 million times during the next 5 years off the U.S. coast alone. We're talking about hearing loss, temporary cessation of feeding, disorientation, and even death. So why does the Navy want to increase the hours of high-intensity sonar? How often are dolphins, whales, and other underwater life exposed to this piercing sound? And what are the alternatives? Who decides? Michael Jasny says scientists have come out with a simple message for both the Canadian and U.S. navies. Keep high-intensity sonar out of the whale's critical habitat. Michael is director of the Marine Mammal Project with the NRDC. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show. And we're joined by Lindy Astori, an active member of Whale and Dolphin Watch in Santa Cruz. Their mission statement says they are committed to bringing awareness to the public of the U.S. Navy's history of killing, maiming, and harassing thousands of whales and dolphins through their underwater sonar sound programs. Their online petition urging the National Marine Fisheries Association not to renew the Navy's permits to use sonar has received more than 500,000 signatures. Lindy is also a sailor, and she joins us from the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz. Hi, Lindia. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Good morning. Thank you for having us on.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we are joined by John Kalambokidis. He is a research biologist and a founder of Cascadia Research, a nonprofit in the state of Washington focusing on marine mammal studies. He's author of Guide to Marine Mammals of Greater Puget Sound and Blue Whales. His latest research, which is funded by the U.S. Navy, focuses on exploring the health impacts of underwater sonar on whales. John also works as a consultant for the NRDC, and he joins us from Olympia, Washington. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thanks for having me on.
Great to have you. So we heard that piercing sound, and we're going to play it throughout the show because I think it's important to hear it. Michael, how often do whales and dolphins and other underwater life hear that sound?
Well, in some parts of the world, indeed, in some areas off the U.S. coast, very, very frequently. As you said at the top of the show, Rose, for Southern California, the Navy intends to use exactly that kind of sound more than 10,000 hours every year over a five-year period for animals that have to make their living in those waters, for blue whales and beaked whales, which are deep-diving whales. They're encountering this sound all the time, and the cumulative impacts of those encounters, potential hearing loss, disruption in foraging, and so on, could very well be affecting them at a species and population level.
What do you mean when you say they're going to hear it all the time?
Well, the Navy uses sonar and other high-intensity sounds in the Southern California area literally every day. And so for animals that make their living in Southern California, the Navy's sonar is unavoidable.
Linda, give us a little bit of history here. How long has this program been around, and how did the Navy come up with this program?
Well, the other two guests may have more information on this than I do, but I will just tell you that my knowledge of it began a little bit over 20 years ago. And at that time, they were installing some underwater sound boxes off the coast of Kauai. We happened to live there, and a woman visited us from Monterey Bay and indicated to us that they had been placed in the Monterey Bay. We had no idea they were there. Contacted the mayor of the island, Joanne Yukimura, at that time, who indicated that she had no knowledge of them either. So through tracking down information and really having to keep somebody's toes to the fire, we were able to find out not only where they were, placed, but also what the sound was doing in the water and to the animals. And to our surprise, a number of people were upset about it. The Navy ended up coming to the island, holding hearings, which, of course, did nothing. They went ahead with the plan anyway. So we followed the issue on and off for the last 20 years. And it has not gotten better. Our sea population has continued to decline, and many think that that may be a direct result of some of the sonar sound that goes in the water. And I'll speak a little bit more to that later. Not just whales and dolphins are affected, but actually every fish in the ocean.
Yeah. Well, and we'll definitely talk about how they're affected. But first, John, can you give us a little bit of history about this program? Why was it created?
Oh, you bet. And I think the main concern on Navy sonar is focused around two different systems, and the Navy uses a wide variety of sounds, but a lot of the focus has been around first mid-frequency active sonar, sometimes called MFA, and that was the type of signal you were playing at the start of this radio show. And that's been around since the 1960s. It's you know, it's used primarily by destroyers and submarines to locate underwater objects and enemy submarines. But the other sound system that's more under development and is newer is something called LFA, for low-frequency active sonar. That's on a much smaller number of ships, is of more recent development, and it's kind of greater concern for some of the, especially the low-frequency animals like whales. So that's a and when you hear kind of sonar debated and some of the actions NRDC has taken with the Navy have focused on one of those two systems. And we may want to talk about those kind of separately, because it's a little bit of a different story. And the focus of this use in Southern California is around this mid-frequency active sonar, and that's what's been associated. Even though the mid-frequency sonar has been used since the 1960s, it was only starting around 2000 that we became aware of the fact that its use was associated with some strandings of especially beaked whales in a number of areas. And since then, the line of evidence has become kind of irrefutable that those stranding events were related to the use of this mid-frequency sonar.
Well, we invited the Navy to join the show, and they declined our invitation. Can you help us understand the reasoning behind their new plan in California? They want to run more than 10,000 hours of high-intensity sonar. What is the reason behind this? I mean, are they still talking about enemy submarines?
No, absolutely. That's, and again, I won't try to play the role the Navy would play here, but that is the main justification. And
enemy
submarines is detecting quiet submarines.
How have they found many enemy submarines? Is this information public?
Rose, if I might jump in, I did. Of course, the Navy doesn't talk about this out in the open, but I did some research. And this is very preliminary research, but the the submarines that we have, which many of them are nuclear subs, are not easily moved around in the ocean and or near the shoreline. And one of the things that many other countries have done recently is they've started using smaller subs that are actually electric and diesel powered. And those have much more ability to move around. And what makes it really interesting is that we continue building these huge submarines, and yet what other countries are moving to are these other smaller ones that are said to be able to easily evade any kind of detection and also to be equipped with sonar evading technologies. So to continue with a program that really is 20 or 30 years old, we all know how quickly technology has been moving. And these are considered by many to be dinosaurs and really not very relevant to what we're doing currently in the world.
So Michael, why do you think the Navy wants to run more than 10,000 hours of high-intensity sonar?
Well, I think for the Navy, this system continues, or these systems continue to be their primary method of submarine detection. Some systems, I think, are probably questionable. A low frequency active sonar, for example, which John mentioned, is one of the kinds of sonar we're very concerned about for impacts on large whales. That system was designed to meet a deep-sea Soviet threat that really no longer exists. For mid-frequency sonar, that's something that the Navy, as yet, may not have effective substitutes for. That said, what the Navy is doing in Southern California and doing off Hawaii and off the East Coast as well, off Guam and other places, it's training and testing. They're not in the business of actually defending the coasts in those areas on their ranges. They're essentially practicing. And our position has long been, in the words of one biologist, that whales should not have to die for practice, and that we should not be threatening the survival and welfare of entire populations of protected wildlife for practice. There has to be, and there are indeed, better ways of doing what the Navy is doing.
And the NRDC sued the Navy and the and NOAA last year. We also invited NOAA to join us, but they couldn't. Talk about what this lawsuit is based on.
Well, we've sued the Navy and NOAA multiple times over this issue, and every court that has considered it on the merits has found that the Navy's analysis of impacts is deficient, and that the Navy's mitigation measures are inadequate and ineffectual. At bottom for us is what the Navy is doing to try to reduce the harm from these activities, and until now anyway, the Navy has really been recalcitrant about adopting the kind of measures that I think most scientists and even NOAA itself believe are most effective.
And John, your research is funded by the Navy, which focuses on exploring the health impacts of underwater sonar on whales. What happens when you deliver your findings to the Navy? What do they do with the info?
No, and you know, we've worked a lot for NOAA in the past, but increasingly in recent years, we actually have a number of research projects that are funded by the Navy, and worldwide, the U.S. Navy is the dominant funder of marine mammal research worldwide. And I think that's appropriate. It does reflect the kind of concern the Navy has with these types of impacts. Some of that is to help determine the level of impact. Others is to help it comply with various environmental requirements that they have to in their areas of testing. So they have taken that on. It's also raised the concern, and it's obviously something we've had to weigh, of when the Navy directly funds research, it does create the potential for a viewed conflict of interest One of the things we've made sure in our research with the Navy, and they've agreed to, is they've been not only interested in our findings, but we do have complete freedom to disseminate those results, you know, without, you know, having to have their approval. And that's why I can participate in calls like this and speak about the research we do. And I will say that not only are they funding the research, but they have been very interested in hearing the results. But the Navy is a huge entity that doesn't, you know, I sort of accept that the Navy's main mission is, you know, defense activities. The protection of marine mammals sits with other agencies like NOAA, and in a lot of ways, as we talk about what needs to be done to ensure protection of marine mammals, where it should be as much directed to NOAA as to the Navy, because that's the agency that's responsible. So the Navy does try to comply with what it's required to. That's still not its main mission.
And that is John Colombo. Yeah, just a minute, Lindia. I just want to let listeners know who we're talking to today. John Kalambokidis is a research biologist and one of the founders of Cascadia Research. They are focusing on marine mammal studies. His latest research is funded by the U.S. Navy. Michael Jasny is a director of the Marine Mammal Project with the National Resources Defense Council. They are suing the Navy over their sonar program. Lindia Story is an active member of Whale and Dolphin Watch in Santa Cruz. They've got an online petition urging NOAA to not renew the Navy's permits to use sonar. They've received 500,000 signatures. And tomorrow, the U.S. Navy and the California Coastal Commission will be meeting to talk about the Navy's plan to run more than 10,000 hours of high-intensity sonar. They also want to detonate more than 50,000 underwater explosives off the Southern California coast. So what do you think about this? If you have any questions, we'd love to hear from you. If you work with marine life, how do you see this program affecting whales and dolphins? And again, I just want to play the sound because we rarely hear this. And then we'll talk about exactly the decibels involved. But first of all, let's just hear this sound. That really hurts. So, John, what are the decibels in that sound?
Yeah, and the actual source level, I don't know. I think you mentioned the figure that's very close to the reality of it, which is kind of the source level. And more importantly, and a major difference between, say, mid-frequency sonar and low-frequency sonar is how quickly does that sound decrease. Michael mentioned the major concern with the LFA sonar, which is lower frequency than the one you just played there. And one of the reasons we're of high concern with that is that does propagate further without losing its intensity because it is lower frequency. So anyway, that sound is something that if you have I can just tell you that someone recently sent me a recording they did while diving off Catalina Island, and they thought it was whale song they were hearing.
Wow.
And it was mid-frequency sonar just like that. Mm-hmm. It is a sound you fairly commonly will hear almost at any point in the Southern California Bight, because it will propagate throughout that area.
Wow. Well, if you'd like to join us, if you've got any questions, if you'd like to sound off yourself about how this affects whales, dolphins, and other underwater life, as Lindia said, this affects all fish in the ocean. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org, or better yet, leave a comment on our website so others can see it at yourcallradio.org. We've got an email from Denise who says, when was the last time we were threatened by submarines? Who would be foolish enough to threaten us when we have more military might than the entire world combined? We're now threatening the very survival of our marine life because of our paranoia about security. Thank you for the email, Denise. Lindia, what are your thoughts on Denise's email?
Well, I think that there's some accuracy to that. And I also have to say, in doing some research, that I can see why the Navy would feel that there's a very real threat, because many other countries in the world have developed these those submarines I mentioned earlier, which are very small and easy to maneuver, and they also don't cost $1 billion. Mm-hmm. They cost more in the neighborhood of $500,000. So that has given access to many more countries to have submarines. and have them available in the ocean. But I agree with Denise about the paranoia, and it's really time for us to start shifting this away from the warfare model and into a model of what's compatible with all of us on the planet. If we start answering people's needs, there's no need for war.
What about the other plan that the Navy has to detonate more than 50,000 underwater explosives off the Southern California coast? Can you tell us about that?
Well, again, you know, those are done. A lot of times people will say, well, the same thing happens with an earthquake or with a volcano under the ocean. But because our cetaceans are very tuned to the earth energy or earth frequency of energy, they're able to move away from natural occurrences in nature. They're not able to do that with someone coming through, dropping a bomb in the water, and them maybe not having the ability to get away. I'll also just mention that one of the ways that they determine, the Navy determines if it's safe or not to drop a bomb, or to emit the sonar sounds is through direct observation of the ocean. And as someone who sailed across the Pacific, I can tell you that you cannot see that far. And so some of the things that we have available, technologies we have available to us right now that might be used to find out if it's safe or not, are not really in use. And one of the things I'll just mention is our overhead satellite system, which can, of course, if you've ever gone on Google Earth, you know you can actually go and look at your front door. And that seems to be a technology that's not really used. What is used is direct observation, and that is not really acceptable, practical, or efficient.
John, did you want to jump in?
Lindy is making, I think, a really important point there. The primary mitigation that the Navy does use is precisely that. It's monitoring a very small area around a sonar vessel, around a detonation site, using a few watch standers on deck, sometimes as few as one. And the problem with that is that, as Lindy said, it's very difficult to spot many species of marine mammal in real time, and especially under the conditions in which the Navy operates. The Navy is out conducting activities at night. It's out operating in other low visibility conditions. It's using sonar and detonating explosives in areas where there are species that are considered cryptic, very hard to see on the surface. So, for example, beaked whales, this is a group of species that have been associated with a string of mass strandings around sonar exercises, and also injuries as well, which we should discuss. They're extremely hard to spot in the water. One published paper gave the Navy about a 2% chance, 1 in 50, of spotting a beaked whale if it happened to come up right on the track line of a ship. So it's essential that mitigation measures, protective measures, expand beyond this mere shipboard monitoring, which is ineffectual.
And just briefly, can you describe beaked whales?
Sure. Well, beaked whales are a whole family of species. They represent about 1/4 of all whales, dolphins, and porpoises, 1/6 of all marine mammals. We didn't really know very much about them until fairly recently.
Michael, hold that thought. We're going to take, sorry to cut you off, we're just going to take a quick break. Today we are talking about the U.S. Navy's sonar program, and we'd love to hear from you. It's your call. We'll be back after this.
Radio KALW. We invite you to join our conversation today by calling 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can post a question or comment on the website, yourcallradio.com. www.usnavy.org, and that's where you can also find links related to today's show.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We'll discuss coverage of the death of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. How should the media cover his legacy? We'll also talk about the media's role in shaping the debate about Social Security and Medicare. And then on Monday, we'll have a conversation about the new documentary, A Place at the Table. This is an important documentary that looks at hunger in the United States. It's out now, so try to see it over the weekend and then join us on Monday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And speaking of films, because we are talking about the U.S. Navy's underwater sonar program, the San Francisco International Ocean Film Festival kicks off tomorrow. It's an amazing film festival, excellent films, a lot of panel discussions about everything from plastic in the oceans and acidification to drilling in the Arctic and overfishing. If you're an ocean lover, you'll definitely want to check out this festival. It kicks off tomorrow at Pier 39 in San Francisco and goes through Sunday. And you can find more information on our Facebook page or oceanfilmfest.org. So what's happening right now is that the U.S. Navy and the California Coastal Commission will be meeting tomorrow to talk about the Navy's plan to detonate more than 50,000 underwater explosives off the Southern California coast. The Navy also wants to run more than 10,000 hours of high-intensity sonar. And we're talking about these plans today with Michael Jasny. He is director of the Marine Mammal Project with the National Resources Defense Council. They sued the Navy to stop this program. Lindy Astori is an active member of Whale and Dolphin Watch in Santa Cruz. They've got an online petition urging the Navy to end this program. They've received more than 500,000 signatures so far. And we're joined by John Kalambokidis. He's a research biologist, one of the founders of Cascadia Research, a nonprofit in Washington State focusing on marine mammal studies. His latest research is funded by the U.S. Navy. And we'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have about the sonar program? Why do you think the Navy is doing this? And if you work with underwater life, how is this program affecting dolphins, whales, and fish? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So, Michael, before the break, you were talking about how there wasn't that much research on beaked whales until recently.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is a fairly unknown family of species, and that's because they occur usually further offshore in deeper waters and spend much of their lives submerged well below the surface. But what happened was in the late 90s beginning more intently around 2000, it began to become clear that Navy sonar was affecting beaked whales in very profound ways. A series of mass stranding events where beaked whales beach themselves live along wide stretches of coastline, very unusual for these deep water species. And as we began to look at the carcasses, essentially, we began to discover something incredible, that not only had these whales suffered on the beach from stranding, but they had suffered injuries at sea somehow connected to their sonar exposure. They had bleeding around the brain. They had lesions in organ tissue, pathologies that were consistent with severe cases of decompression sickness or the bends. And it's really remarkable, especially because it was believed for very long before this that whales and other diving marine mammals were largely immune from barotrauma decompression sickness. But now we know that, there's a very significant problem, and beaked whales are at the center of it.
Well, I mean, the Navy's own research shows this, right? The latest estimates show that the sonar training will harm marine mammals more than 10 million times during the next 5 years off the U.S. coast alone. And so, Michael, can you help us understand what this means? They're counting, like, hearing loss as one, cessation of feeding one, death one. And so they're saying 10 million of these cases over the next 5 years?
Yes, and it's the sheer number that is so concerning. Over time, I think the attention of the scientific community has turned to the cumulative effects. What are the effects of all of these individual instances of temporary hearing loss and disruption of foraging and breeding and calving? What I think the evidence is beginning to show is that for Southern California, the Navy's activities at their present levels may be having some very significant cumulative effects on populations. And John should add more about this, but just to give you an example, a paper published last month by scientists at NOAA found that beaked whale populations in the California Current have declined, and declined probably very significantly over the last 20 years. And they come up with two plausible hypotheses. One is ecosystem change. The other is anthropogenic noise, and specifically the Navy's activities in Southern California. They suggest that Southern California may have become a population sink, maybe very attractive to beaked whales. But once beaked whales are here, the amount of Navy activity taking place affects them in some way that makes it difficult for them to reproduce or bring their calves to maturity.
John, what would you add to that?
Yeah, and I think Michael makes some good points. Some of the main training areas that the Navy uses off Southern California, west of San Clemente, we've actually, in some of the studies we've been involved with, have found pretty high sighting rates of one type of beaked whale, something called a Cuvier's beaked whale, and it seems to have found a way to at least coexist. It may be affected studies in the East Coast, and they seem to be supported by our studies on the West Coast, show these animals still respond to the sonar and move away, but we haven't seen the kind of mass strandings that have occurred when the sonar is used in other areas. But the another group of beaked whales called the Mesoplodon beaked whales are what Michael was referring to. Those are being very rarely seen in Southern California, and the rate at which those are being seen in some of these surveys has declined, and that's the kind of group of beaked whales we're concerned with. Perhaps they haven't found a way to adapt to some of these threats. They do face a number of other threats. Michael mentioned change, but they also have been subject to some things like entanglement in offshore drift gill nets. So there are a couple of other possible sources of harm that may be acting and affecting the population, either singly or in combination with things like Navy sonar.
And John, you've said that you don't think the Navy will stop this program altogether, right?
Well, the specially mid-frequency sonar is a pretty fundamental part of the Navy's operations. It exists on, you know, unlike the LFA program that was on a smaller number of ships, this has been a key part of their operations for 40, 50 years. The emergence of these electric diesel, smaller submarines that Lyndia was talking about is actually part of their concern in using these, more countries having more of these. So certainly that's not something the Navy is going to move away from completely. But I do think, you know, a major goal, even if that isn't the case, is to find places and times that the sonar can be used that are less impactful, improve mitigation measures that might provide added protections to what's being done now. So whether the Navy, I doubt the Navy would willingly abandon them, but there are still a lot of other measures that could be taken that might reduce impacts on marine mammals.
And Lyndia, what measures would those be?
Well, some of the thoughts that people have in terms of doing that is to set up areas that are protected areas, especially around our coastline. And right now, occasionally, the sound is not only emitted out away from the mainland, but also in areas that are protected areas. And so really putting some focus and some attention on some of the new things, the new technologies that could mitigate those effects would be in order. And I'm not sure, you know, how we go about that, because how do you know where the sea life is when it's dark, when it's nighttime?
Right.
It's a very difficult one to find. One of the other things I wanted to mention, Rose, is that the sounds that when you put the sonar sound on and we're listening to that, that what happens is in air, 99.97% of the acoustic energy is actually reflected away from our bodies. But because we're mostly water, because animals are in water, there's no reflection or reduction in the energy of that sound. And so for a body like a whale or a dolphin or another cetacean, being in the water and hearing that sound makes it really difficult for them to not be injured or really injured. So we just think 99% of that sound is reflected, but when you're in the water, you get almost 100% of it. That's pretty significant.
That is Lindy Astori. She's an active member of Whale and Dolphin Watch in Santa Cruz, and their petition to pressure the Navy to end the sonar program has received more than 500,000 signatures. We're also joined by Michael Jasny, director of the Marine Mammal Project with the National Resources Defense Council. They have sued the Navy over the sonar program. And John Kalambokidis is a research biologist, one of the founders of Cascadia Research. They focus on marine mammal studies, and his latest research is funded by the Navy. And we've got just about 15 minutes left, so if you'd like to weigh in on this conversation about the U.S. Navy's sonar program. Again, they are going to meet with the California Coastal Commission. We'll be talking about what the process is like. They're going to meet tomorrow to talk about the plan to detonate more than 50,000 underwater explosives off the Southern California coast. They also want to run more than 10,000 hours of high-intensity sonar. And you can join us at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from George in San Francisco. Hi, George. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. You know, some time ago, this an added wrinkle we wanted to read into the speculation on marine mammals and sonar for our friends who are intervening on behalf of marine mammals. Someone pointed out that some researchers found that a pod of marine mammals, say a group of whales, provided a kind of a shadow where you could park your submarine and it would be hard to detect, so that one would speculate that one of the features of these exercises is to find ways to locate submarines that are playing hide-and-seek by dodging in behind a pod of whales, using them as camouflage. Sounds pretty far-fetched, but it might be a question that should be posed in some ways that the people at the Navy would have to answer whether that's a feature of this particular scenario.
Well, we called the Navy, and they declined our invitation, so we can't ask them. But thank you for calling in. Let's go next to Lisa in San Francisco. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I'll try to make it quick. I want to warn the public, everyone that lives up and down the coast, that the same thing that's happened in the Gulf of Mexico with Halliburton, D.C., and Transocean, the same thing's going to happen with what the Navy is doing now and what they've done with the Hanford in the nuclear power plant there with the waste. They keep lying to the public and saying everything's safe, don't worry, you can trust us, we're the experts, and all the protesters are stupid and they don't know what they're talking about. Well, just remember, look at those films from what Halliburton, D.C., and Transocean did to the Gulf of Mexico. It's going to happen up and down Pacific Coast. They just want to, like, they just, you got that saying, drill, baby, drill. They just want to drill up and down the Pacific Coast. And then everyone should look at the YouTube videos for, type in H-A-A-R-P, Alaska, near comma, Eagle River. There's an excellent documentary with the actor Martin Sheen about HARP. And they're doing the same thing with sonar to cause massive lightning storms with, like, 10,000 radio stations.
Well, you know, thank you for calling in. And we actually were planning to do a show about the Gulf and then to talk about media coverage of the Supreme Court case, which surprisingly just didn't get that much attention a couple of weeks ago. So thank you for calling. We've got an email from Jackie who says, when we're talking about the Navy's plan to run more than 10,000 hours of high-intensity sonar, is this constant noise and for how long? Is this from one location or sub or many? How far does the sound reach? John, do you want to take that?
Sure. A lot of these are associated with exercises that occur in a kind of more concentrated period, and it's especially the mid-frequency sonar is primarily used by destroyers that are trying to detect submarines, but they have a number of different kind of platforms they use for it. So that's just a little bit about kind of how it's used. Generally, it is for more kind of discrete chunks of time, but there may be multiple exercises and multiple ships using it in multiple locations at the same time.
All right. Well, thank you for the email. We've got an email from Sam who says, if there's money to be made from animals, whether it's the circus, a Vegas show, or tusk trades, it will be done no matter what the atrocity. If animals stand in the way of an industry, cattle, for example, humans will eliminate them. And here we are going around and around on this sonar military issue again, even after we've determined quite clearly how harmful our actions are. But we must proceed in order to find better ways of warfare. It's tragic. Humans treat the environment and living creatures like they're disposable. Thank you for bringing light to this hugely important topic. Well, Sam, thank you so much. And, you know, you bring up a great point because NPR had an interesting piece yesterday about the elephant trade, how it's going through the roof. And then the Chronicle had an article yesterday about a bill in the California Assembly that would limit the number of bobcats that can be killed. And I didn't even know this was legal in California. But this is on the rise because there's a huge demand for trade for fur. So, you know, maybe we'll do a show about that because I think it's a very important topic. So thank you for the email. Let's play a clip. We're going to hurt your ears again by playing sound of what underwater life, whales, dolphins, and fish hear when the Navy take part in this sonar program, or I guess push the on button. And then the voice you're going to hear in this clip is Ken Balcom. He is a scientist with the Center for Whale Research.
We saw a destroyer on the horizon coming toward Harrow Strait. And actually, before we even saw it, we heard it. And then we saw the local J-pod killer whales crowded up against the shore and also moving north away from the vessel. For an extended period of time, these whales stayed near the surface. They didn't go diving and foraging as they had been prior to the ship showing up. And they also came very close to shore. They just kept changing direction all the time as if they were seeking some direction that would be out of this sound field. We were seeing extreme aversion or avoidance of the sounds by the porpoises and whales at 12 to 15 miles from the ship. I was present in the Bahamas in March 2000 when we had a steady population of beaked whales mysteriously began swimming ashore and stranding on the beach, all within a few hour period. There had been a sonar exercise in the area, and the Navy ultimately admitted that they were the probable cause of these strandings. Seems as though it may have been just an extreme avoidance get away from this incredibly loud, scary sound and painful sound.
And that is the voice of Ken Balcom. He's a scientist with the Center for Whale Research. And we grabbed that clip from the Whale and Dolphin Watch website. John Kalambokides, again, your research is funded by the U.S. Navy. What happens when the Navy admits that these animals have died because of sonar? Does it just say, well, this happened and sorry it happened, but we're going to continue?
Well, quite a bit of the motivation for some of the research projects like the one we're engaged in, which is one of the mysteries now that I think everyone has acknowledged, including the Navy, that some of these stranding events occurred related to Navy exercises and Navy sonar, has been trying to understand the mechanism, which is why did it occur. At first it seemed puzzling because the sound intensity level didn't seem like it would be enough to cause the kind of physiological injuries caused in as many animals as it was. And one of the aspects that we're specifically studying, and this is a study done by a number of different groups, not just us, is because it appears that it might be the behavioral response of the animals. In other words, they're hearing the sound, and the way they respond behaviorally might be resulting in either injury or the stranding. And that's kind of a key element, because that suggests why it might occur at a much lower received level to the animal and affect more animals than had been anticipated previously. So obviously the Navy is kind of hoping that through understanding why this occurs and how it occurs, it would suggest solutions for how to reduce the impacts it's having.
And of course, this isn't the only sound that underwater life hears. We have an email from Alan with the Blue Dolphin Alliance. He says, what kind of effects will the seismic tests being used off of Diablo Canyon and are currently being used off of New Zealand to locate oil and mineral reserves have on highly endangered species like the Maui dolphin? He says there are only 55 left in the world, just 35 females. Do you know, John? Are you familiar with this?
Yes, no, certainly. And this was an issue that came to the fore last year, because while these types of air gun seismic tests have been done in many parts of the world's oceans and are a major concern because these are very high-intensity sounds also being produced, a lot of it for oil exploration, but some of it for things like looking at earthquake faults. Well, we haven't had those on the West Coast for quite some time with large air gun arrays, and last year we had three projects that came up. One of them went ahead and occurred off Oregon, Washington, and two others were proposed for California, and the one off Diablo Canyon. I think it did mobilize quite a bit of opposition, and RDC was certainly involved in that, and the California Coastal Commission played a major role in at least preventing that from occurring last year. But it would be another, again, very loud sound source that we are concerned would have an impact on marine mammals.
And Lyndia, the U.S. Navy and the California Coastal Commission are going to discuss these issues at a meeting tomorrow in San Diego. What will take place there, and how can people who care about this issue raise their voice?
Rose, thank you for asking. People can go to our website, whaleanddolphinwatch.com, and there is a button on there both to sign the petition on signon.org, and there's also a way to go to our Facebook page. And the Facebook page has the details on timing, the location, all of the information that people would need if they want to make their voices heard. Come there, they can do that. Or they can also send their comments to the California Coastal Commission. So I also just wanted to mention something else that we haven't really addressed.
And Lyndia, just quickly, I just want to make sure we get the information about the meeting, because we're almost out of time. And Michael, I understand you're going to be at the meeting tomorrow?
Yes, I am. I think Lyndia will as well.
Okay.
And obviously, we'll be speaking in opposition to the Navy's proposal.
And so who ultimately makes the decision?
Well, for tomorrow, the Coastal Commission decides whether to approve the proposal, to approve it with conditions, or to deny it. Now, twice in the past, the Commission has approved the Navy's proposals for work off of Southern California with conditions, and twice the Navy has spurned the the commission's recommendations. Mm. That's why we're calling for a stronger tack this time around.
All right. So again, that meeting is taking place tomorrow. So now is a good time to raise your voice if you have opinions about this. Sorry, Lindy. I just wanted to get that out there because it's important. So we've got just about a minute left. What else did you want to bring to the table?
I just wanted to mention that this program is not just in the U.S. It's really worldwide. And that's important to remember. You mentioned, Rose, when we first started the program, that the Navy actually will be covering 70% of the world's oceans with this sonar sound. 70%. Mm. That's such an amazing, amazing amount. And something we haven't really addressed that I think is important, and in researching, I found nothing online that is being researched in this regard, which is we have a continued decline of ocean-going fish.
Right.
And we focus here on cetaceans, but cetaceans depend on those other fish, other sea creatures to actually live. And so we have that decline. We also know that sound really affects the development of plants. And many of the algae, the world's algae, are disappearing. And that is a major issue because that is the biggest producer of oxygen on the planet. So we're not just talking about a slight disruption in our ecosystem. We're talking about something that could have major implications on everything from farming in Iowa to how we're the kind of clean air we're able to breathe.
It's such a great point. And a good documentary about this is called End of the Line, which is out now. And John, final thoughts from you. Sorry, we just have about 15 seconds.
Just that I think it's very important that people be knowledgeable about this. I encourage them to participate in this. I think the Navy is interested in these results and taking a role. But again, I would not just focus on the Navy, but also think about NOAA and the other agencies responsible for the regulations that protect marine mammals.
John Kalambokidis is a research biologist. His latest research is funded by the Navy. Lindy Astori is a member of Whale and Dolphin Watch in Santa Cruz. Michael Jasny is director of the Marine Mammal Project with the NRDC. If you care about these issues, be sure to go to the San Francisco Ocean Film Fest, kicking off tomorrow in San Francisco. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for listening. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. On the next Shore Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of the death of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. His legacy is revered by his friends and scorned by his enemies. How should the media cover his legacy? We'll also discuss the media's role in shaping the debate about Social Security and Medicare. We'll be joined by McClatchy's Kevin Hall, Columbia Journalism Review's Trudy Lieberman, and The New Yorker's John Anderson. What did you see the best reporting this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar. And you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.